Well, good evening and welcome back to the Journey Home program. I'm your host, Jean-Marc Grodi, here on EWTN. And once again, we have this great privilege on the Journey Home program to share with you a story. Tonight, we're joined by Sister Julia Mary Derenkamp, FSP. She's a former evangelical Protestant, and you can check her out on Instagram at srjulia. Sister, thanks so much for joining us on
my
the program
pleasure,
tonight
really.
To share your story as well as your vocation story. I'm so excited to dig into all that and hear about it. So, where would you say your spiritual journey begins? Fill us in the background.
Well, it started one day on a beach. And I think I must have been about maybe 7 years old. And it was, they had like a boardwalk and, you know, one of those little stores where you can buy things. It looked like a bazaar. Yeah. And my dad took me in and I said, I want that. And he said, oh, you can't have that. That's not our religion. And it was a shiny gold crucifix. And I couldn't understand because I really thought that that was Jesus on the crucifix, right? But that was kind of like the beginning of my questioning, like, so how is that not our religion?
Right.
Okay. But growing up in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, there's absolutely nothing to do, but at least back in the late 60s, early 70s. It's just kind of boring. So we spent a lot of time at the library and a lot of time church hopping. Now, not when the churches were open, because back then they had all the churches where they weren't locked. So out of curiosity, my friend and I, Christine, would go in and out of churches just to look, just to see. And then we would read all summer long. And what happened was we came across a book called The Song of Bernadette. And we're two little Protestant girls, and we have no idea who Bernadette was or this lady that was appearing to her, no clue. But we were fascinated with the story. And we were also really intrigued that it was a girl our own age. We were like 13. So she also, the next book we came across was The Life of Maria Goretti, which that both of them were old beat up paperbacks, you know, that we had found at the public library. So after we read those two books, exchanged them, we both read them, we went back to the library and we started looking around in the card catalog, which is way back when, for anything that had ST or Saint in the title. And I think we exhausted it after about maybe half a dozen titles. So we were a little bit depressed because we said we probably finished all the good books in the world because those qualified now as the best books in the world, anything that had Saint in it.
Yeah.
So, you know, so but we continued our search, you know, we were looking for books and then looking through the different churches. And across the street from where I lived on Walnut Street, there was two churches. There was Redeemer Lutheran on one corner, and on the other corner was Sacred Heart Church, Catholic Church. And we wandered into Sacred Heart Catholic Church, and I'll tell you, the Catholic churches are the most interesting. I mean, there was so much to see in there. It was all these stained glass windows, and we noticed that they were windows of the people we had been reading about.
Oh, wow.
And so I looked at Chris and I said, Chris, all these people we're reading about, they all go to Sacred Heart Church. We have got to find out more about this church, right?
Yeah.
So looking for more books, we ended up going all the way to Philadelphia, which was a drive for us. It was like an hour away. But she had found a tiny, tiny little postage size advertisement for the Daughters of St. Paul bookstore in Philadelphia. And when we walked in, I said, it was like the Disneyland of these saint books. I mean, it's like there was so many saint books all over. So we walked up to the counter with a stack of books. And actually, I had come unprepared because I asked her how much money I should bring. And she said, oh, I don't think you have to bring any money. These are nuns. They're not going to charge you, right? So so thank God her mother came along. So Mrs. Orfeo paid for the stack of books that I had, which prayer books, saint books, you know, books on the Blessed Mother. And when I walked up to the counter, the sister behind the counter said, they see two young girls, they see stacks of saint books. And so the first thing they ask you is, oh, did you ever think about, you know, becoming a sister? And I said, no, I've honestly never given it much thought. I said, but don't you have to be Catholic to do that? And she said, yes, you do. And so she went behind the counter again and came back out with a catechism. Uh-huh. And on the way home, Chris and I had been reading it back and forth. And I said, Chris, you're not going to believe this. I said, but in the back of the book, there was a list of all the different Protestant denominations, the person who founded them, the year it was founded, and the country it was founded. I said, look, they even have my church in here. But it was like, and then at the top of it, it had Catholic Church, founder Jesus Christ, year 33 AD. And, you know, I said, really? I said, I thought Jesus started our church too. And I said, well, who would want to belong to any church that he didn't start? I said, I think we should find out more about this church. So that's how the whole thing actually started, was through books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where did that fit in your family's life? What was the the sense of Catholicism? Did you have any?
Well, you know, we had different we belonged to different churches actually. Okay. When it was just my mom and dad, we went to the Methodist church because it had a good choir. And my dad was a singer. He actually sang with the Met for 25 years. So that factored in big time, you know, with what church we went to. And then we moved in with our grandparents, my dad's parents, when he went to school for music. So they went to the First Church of God. And that was a story, too, because my grandmother had grown up Lutheran and my grandfather had grown up something else, and they couldn't decide which church to go to. So they went to the First Church of God. And then another neighborhood we lived in, we were on the other corner, was the Mennonite Sunday School. So we went there, too. So I have like all different brands of right. Protestant. Right. So I can't really tell you which particular one. Although the last church that I went to was the First Church of God. My grandfather was the janitor there. We went like 2-3 times a week. You know, the youth groups were very strong, the Sunday school. I mean, we were really fervent Protestants. So, yeah. So that's where we started. It was a strong Protestant foundation. So when I told them that I wanted to go to the Catholic Mass, they said, well, that's not your religion. I said, but I just want to go. Can I just go? So they let me go. And I went with Christine, and when I came back home, they were all sitting in the dining room, like family council type of thing. And they wanted to know what I thought about it, and I told them. I said, I loved it. I thought it was wonderful. And they said, well, that's the only time you can go, because that's not your religion. And I said, no, but I really want to go back. And, you know, and they insisted. My grandmother, who was like the religious matriarch of the family, went upstairs crying because she couldn't understand where she went wrong with me. And actually, it was her foundation that made me even go in that direction, right? But anyhow, yeah, they naturally didn't take to it, yeah. And it was there was like a that's it, you're not going. Basically, they told me that I could do what I wanted when I was 18, and I said, but I would be wasting 5 years of my life. If, you know, waiting for that to happen. So it was kind of a deadlock, you know, yeah. I was, yeah. Yeah. They didn't want me to do it. I was too young to do it. And so I was stubborn and just boycotted going to church for a while.
Yeah. So did that last all those 5 years? Or?
No, actually it ended pretty quickly. At first they said to me, well, why don't you go to St. John's Episcopal? Because this way you can have all the ceremony and ritual you want and you can still be Protestant. And I said, that's kind of the point, mm-hmm. you know, because after reading the back of that catechism, I wanted to belong to this particular church. I even tried telling them about, you know, in the back of the catechism, it had a list of all the popes from St. Peter all the way to Paul VI, who was the pope at the time. And I said, look at that. Every single year, they have all the different years and all the and it's unbroken from St. Peter. And I said, if I just explain that to them, they're going to understand it and they'll become Catholic too. And that wasn't the case. But I was 13. So, you know, everything is very simplified when you're 13. It's like, you know, this makes sense, doesn't it? I said, if Jesus started the church and St. Peter was like, you know, entrusted with it and all his successors up until the present day, I said, wouldn't you be convinced it was not our religion. So that was the end of that. So every Sunday they would ask, do you want to go to church? I said, of course I want to go to church, but I want to go to Sacred Heart. And so I wouldn't go to church because they wanted to take me to First Church of God. So what happened in between, which was like a minor miracle, mm-hmm. was my mother, who was not raised anything. She was, her mother, my grandmother had seven or eight children, and she didn't raise them anything in particular. She had a difficult life and, you know, divorced when my mother was like maybe 13, and she was the youngest in the family. So my mother had no background in religion until she married my dad, because they were a real staunch Protestant family. Right. So she went to visit her mom and to complain about me, actually, and say she doesn't understand, you know, I'm only 13, why am I insisting? And, you know, she knows that the family is Protestant, why is she making this trouble for us, et cetera, et cetera. And my grandmother just looked at her real calmly and said, well, Joyce, I don't understand what the problem is. I'm Catholic. And she said, well, when did this happen? When did this happen, Mom? And she said, well, I took a job as a cleaning lady at St. Mary's, Old St. Mary's in Lancaster. And she was just so impressed with the priest that worked there and the people that worked there that she asked to become Catholic. So in the short amount of time that she had not seen her mom, she had taken instructions and become Catholic.
Wow.
Yeah. So when she comes home with this information, you can imagine what my response was. So can I go to church with Grandma? You know. So in the meantime, I was living with our Lutheran Protestant grandparents, but it was my mother, who had not been raised anything, whose mother had become Catholic, and that's pretty much what turned the tide, so to speak. Wow. Yeah. So my grandmother got me instructions with the priest that had given her instructions, mm-hmm. you know, and the miracle part of it is that grandmother was only Catholic for less than a year, because she died. She,
oh, wow.
Yeah, she was working at St. Mary's, and she had just finished, and she walked like one or two blocks away, and she had an aneurysm. They ran over to the church, called the priest. They gave her last rites, but basically she got me set up with the priest that gave her instructions, knew that I was on my way. And I think that she passed away maybe 2 weeks before my first communion in January. So,
wow.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing about, you know, the encounters with the saints, right, as that early part of the journey. You know, as you mentioned a couple of times, you know, the attitude was, well, you know, you're 13, and these are very simple reasons. You know, you don't understand the complexity of this. But there is something about truth there, where sometimes, you know, the common sense about where did the church come from? Is there this continuity? And who are the people that exemplify this
precisely
this faith,
precisely, you know? And I said, you know, like after, I mean, it's true. I mean, maybe it's really divine providence that it wasn't Saint Jerome that I came across or somebody like that.
Right?
I couldn't identify with him, but it was saints that were my own age. It was, you know, and I said, wow. I mean, you're talking about Saint Bernadette, Saint Maria Goretti, Saint Agnes, Saint, you know, the young mm-hmm. saints, and I said that I could identify with, you know, so that is what drew us into the church, and it was actually, you know, then Saint Bernadette that got me started praying the Rosary. Up until then, I didn't know what the Rosary was. I didn't know who Mary was. I, you know, apart from, as I said, you know, in our Protestant church, we saw Mary once a year in the nativity scene because you couldn't avoid it. You can't have the nativity without the mother, you know, and then you go back in the closet, you know. So this was the first time I'm reading something about, you know, Mary appearing to this young French girl. And I said, this is, you know, it just blew it out of the water for us because, you know, growing up, especially at that age, because I really believe that that's like a magical age for somebody like 13 or 14, because anything is possible, absolutely anything. And at that age, you're looking for heroes. Mm-hmm. You're looking for models. You're looking for people that you can, you know, and unfortunately today it's got a lot to do with, you know, supermodels, superheroes, movie stars, sports heroes, that kind of stuff. I said, but these were the people I was actually looking for up until then. Yeah. I was always looking for, you know, the heroic, but when you come across true heroism, you know, in the lives of the saints, it opened up something totally new for us. And it was the lives of these people that really convinced us about Catholicism.
Yeah.
We were too young to understand, you know, all the complexities. And but yeah. reading that catechism that Jesus started the Catholic Church and that the popes have a continuous line all the way back to St. Peter, I said, whatever else they say, I believe it. Okay. Why would you have to be convinced on every single topic in the catechism if that's the person who founded your church?
Yeah.
And if there's a continuity that goes all the way back to apostolic times. Okay, I was only 13 and I could not explain this to my parents the way I wanted to. But those two things in particular were like no-brainers.
So, yeah. We slip into a faith that seems to hinge on sometimes, you know, whether or not we can, you know, whether we can read Greek and translate deep books and read. That's the gospel has to be something that, you know, can be received by everyone.
Precisely.
You know?
I said, and especially for young teenagers at that time, it's like, you know, we wanted that. And so we were reading, you know, lives of the early Christians and the martyrs, some who were very young.
Right.
How much theology did St. Agnes know? Really? Come on. She knew basically what I was learning at that point.
Yeah.
Jesus started this church. Therefore, that's the one I want to belong to. Any word he says is truth.
Yeah.
Anything that comes out of his mouth. If he started this church and gave it to St. Peter, and that is a continuous line, I mean, I can learn as I go.
Yeah.
I can learn as I go. But the important thing was that this was his church, and I wanted to belong to it.
And you'd receive that gift of faith. Like you'd come to know Jesus. That really is this core thing, that once I come to know him, well, then I come to know who he is. Well, then the only question is, well, what does he want? What has he said? What has he given us?
What does he say?
Right.
And no matter what he says, I'm cool with it. It's like, you know, and at 13, I said, you know, I've got a ways to go, and I'm sure I have a lot to learn. But in advance, it's like, yeah, I believe it. I believe it because of that particular foundation.
Yeah.
You know, the rest of it is extra.
We're joined tonight by Sister Julia Mary Derenkamp, FSP. Sister, you know, another thing that strikes me about your story so far, you know, is that you're encountering these saints, these saints that really spoke to you. But you also mentioned, you know, like the Marian apparitions, right? Mary appearing, this miraculous appearing to St. Bernadette. And again, to Protestant ears, that's very weird. Like, that is weird stuff. But what's interesting, again, but you also mentioned that at that time in our lives, we're sort of blessed with a childlike wisdom to be open of, it's not a question of what would God do. Who am I to say what God would or wouldn't do? The question is, what has he done? Right? Because the incarnation's not more weird than...
Right? Exactly. Exactly. Right. It's like, if you believe one thing, then the next thing is not so hard to believe.
Right.
You know, and even Jesus himself, I think, ran into that incredulity, you know, with you know, the Jews of his time. Right. He didn't fit their idea of what the Messiah should be. They were totally disappointed at the way he manifested being Messiah. But he was God. He could do what he wants. Mm. He could say what he wants. And I think the same thing follows with Mary, is that, you know, she's the mother of God, and God himself fixed it that way. I mean, he is the one who wanted it that way. And so who am I to say she can't go all over the world if she wants to? I mean, really. But at that age, it was a new concept for me. Absolutely. I was like, well, this is kind of cool. I mean, I've never heard it before, but it's, you know, why wouldn't she? At that age, I'm thinking to myself, if she can, why not?
Right.
If you know, for at that age, you're open to mysteries, to the supernatural, to the impossible. Mm-hmm. Because at that age, I thought I could be a Russian ballerina. So I mean, there's certain things that why not at that age? So even with regard to the faith, nothing seemed really impossible. Mm-hmm. That I would have to know it deeper or learn about it. Absolutely. And I think, you know, when I entered the convent, that was, you know, that was an expansion of the catechism, let me tell you, because we knew very little back in the days. You know, they had like a tiny little pamphlet of the catechism that we memorized. There was no RCIA. This was in the early 70s.
Right.
So I thought I had known everything that was in that catechism. But then when I entered the convent, it was, we had catechism class. We have catechism class? So it's like, and everything at that point, it was like just one new revelation after another.
Right. Well, it's, again, it's that old, the old phrase, you know, faith seeking understanding. I think sometimes we get it the other way around. In other words, we already have a conclusion and we're trying to find a faith that fits that rather than, no, I know Jesus. So I put my faith in Jesus. Now I want to be open to understanding whatever is true. What did he really do? What did he really, really say?
Yeah.
What is the church that he gives us?
Yeah. But that's, yeah. I think that step number one is this is his church, therefore.
Right.
Yeah. So
right.
A lot of people I think go through, and maybe if I was older, I would have had a lot more questions, but at that age, it's, you know, it seemed pretty simple. And it was the saints and the Blessed Mother that were like the hook.
Yeah.
You know, the other churches did not have them. Even the Anglican church that my parents wanted me to go to, there's your ritual and you can still be Protestant. I said, I noticed their stained glass windows of saints only go up to a certain century and then stop. But, you know, in the Sacred Heart Church, all these people we're reading about, they have stained glass windows of these people. I mean, so it stopped there, but it continued here. Why? Why?
Yeah.
So it's like, to me, it seemed like really simple, obvious reasons. And I guess you could really complicate your life by wanting to know all the answers first.
Yeah.
But I said, first, I believe it. Now tell me what the truths are.
Right.
And I'll believe it.
That's beautiful. Yeah. So you received instruction and you were received into the church?
I did. I received instructions and then I made my first communion January 1st. And I wanted to make it on Christmas. And the priest said no for some funny reason. So he said, pick another date. So I said, well, you know, it's a good way to start the new year. Let me take January 1st. I had no idea it was also a major feast day of the Blessed Mother. I was happy about it afterwards, you know, but it was January 1st. And I made it by myself because my family naturally, I think my grandfather dropped me off at church. I went in by myself. My girlfriend came with me, Christine. So she had come into the church like maybe a month before that.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but she kind of had the way open to her because when she went to her mother and said, I would like to become Catholic, her mother said, well, actually, you already are. I just never raised you Catholic. So she was already baptized, but she was never raised Catholic. So she had an easier way. When I said it, it was like, I was asking to become Buddhist or something. You know, it was like extreme. And then my grandmother told me all these really wild stories about what Catholics do. And I said, Grandma, I don't think that's right. I have not met anybody that did this or this or this. But she had grown up Lutheran, you know, at the turn of the century practically. So it's like, I said, that's not really true, you know, but I would kind of have to almost catechize my grandparents and parents because they grew up hearing things about the Catholic Church. And, you know, I think part of the problem with adults is that they're so reinforced in what they believe, you know, growing up Protestant, and they never ask the questions. Mm. They never ask questions. And I think at 13, you're asking tons of questions.
Right.
And when all of a sudden you're presented with this, it's like, why wouldn't you want this? Why wouldn't you? You know, because and then I realized afterwards when explaining it to my family and how you just get blank looks. I said, well, maybe it's a gift. Maybe it's, I said, to me, it's the truth, and the truth has a certain ring to it.
Yeah.
And but even sharing that with them, they weren't ready for it. They just never questioned it.
Right.
So
yeah, it's one of the marks of a particular belief system or way of thinking is sort of its relationship to questions. Some belief systems sort of involve like, well, we just don't go there. Like, we don't ask about this. We don't really deal with this. And Catholicism has a fundamental openness to, we want truth and the whole truth, you know, and it's even open to the point where Catholicism has a respect for great mysteries that we receive in Revelation, that we just receive them. We hold them. We don't try to dismiss them. We keep exploring them and sitting in, you know, with them, you know, but never trying to dismiss them or oversimplify them, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, but that's even in the gospel too.
Right.
Where when Jesus says, you know, I have a lot more things to tell you, but you're not ready for it yet. You know, and truthfully, there's a lot of people that aren't ready for it.
Yeah.
But But I, like I said, at that age, and there's more saints. I mean, there are so many young saints and in the Catholic Church. And I said, it's just, I don't know. I said, and why is it that holiness and sanctity is so like deep rooted in the Catholic Church? Why is it? I don't know. To me, it's a very convincing argument when you see when you read about the saints, and I've never stopped reading about saints.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, let's take a little break there because you became Catholic, but you weren't a sister yet. So a lot's happened since then. We'll come back in a couple minutes and hear more about what happened after you became Catholic, and then you know, connect the journey with the present and your present, you know, your vocation story and all
okay.
that. So.
Okay.
Again, thanks for joining us. We'll be back in just a couple minutes, you know, so sit tight. We'll be back with Sister Julia Mary Derenkamp, FSP, former evangelical Protestant. There was a bunch of stuff in there, but we'll hear the rest of it here in a minute. I want to remind you, if you want to connect with Sister, you can check her out on Instagram at srjulia, at srjulia. That's her handle there. Also, if you want to learn more about FSP, give me the Latin.
Daughters
again.
Of St. Paul, Filia di San Paolo.
Right, but the Daughters of St. Paul, a wonderful order of sisters. You can check out pauline.org for information about the order, mm-hmm. or paulinestore.com.
For the books that we
for
print.
The books, yeah. Wonderful ministry there. So again, we'll be back and we'll hear more about all that in just a few minutes. See you then. Welcome back to the Journey Home program. We're entering the second half of our hour tonight, talking to Sister Julia Mary Derenkamp, Sister FSP from the Daughters of St. Paul. She's a former evangelical Protestant, and really appreciate your story so far, Sister. Again, we were talking beforehand about, you know, just the childlike wonder and the questioning, being open to the questions, being open not to what. You know, what do I think God would do? But no, what did God do? What church did he found?
Exactly.
What did his mother do? Just being open to the truth there and where that led you and your childhood friend. Just beautiful stuff.
Yeah. I think besides the saints, like I said, I'm still really close friends with Saint Bernadette because she was the first saint I read about and because she introduced me to Mary and to the Rosary. But I've from that point on, it's always been, you know, she was one of the reasons, the Blessed Mother, why I'm in the church, and because I felt such a great lack in the Protestant church. You know, I'd always look forward to, like, Christmas, you would see her, but then, like I said, then she would disappear. Mm-hmm. And come to find out that she's very alive, very active, very present in the Catholic Church. And when Christine and I had gone into the Sacred Heart Church, we noticed that in the Mary Chapel, all the stained glass windows had, you know, Our Lady of Guadalupe, Our Lady of La Salette, Fatima, Lourdes, Mount Carmel, etc. And I said, well, how many are there? You know, how many people? I thought they were all different, you know. Yeah. And then we realized it's the same Mary that's just visiting all over the world in every century and every continent and, you know, being what she was for Jesus when she was on the earth, for his mystical body, being mother and being concerned about, you know, her children. And from that point on, it was like, I don't know, you're smitten. It was kind of like love at first sight kind of thing. And when I was, before I had become Catholic, my Protestant grandmother, who's really, it's because of her that I'm religious at all. She had called the Protestant pastor. And she said, I called Pastor Lewis and he's coming over. I said, no, Graham, I don't want to talk to Pastor Lewis. And she said, no, I want you to talk with him. I had just finished going through the Billy Graham Catechism and had baptism by immersion in the First Church of God. And within the next couple months, I had read Song of Bernadette. That's how quick. So my grandmother wanted to make sure I wasn't like going crazy. Yeah. So she called Pastor Lewis. He's a nice man, very nice man, whose daughter became Catholic, actually. So, I mean, but anyhow, he was explaining to me that there's not much difference between the Catholic Church and our First Church of God, except for Mary. And it was at that point that the, you know, it was like a light switch just flipped. I said, that's it. No, I said, if she's not included, that's it. I just can't anymore. Because then once you discover her, it's like, no, I'm not going to put her back in the closet. She is now one of the reasons, mm-hmm. you know. So instead of being like an obstacle, I know Mary is an obstacle sometimes, or the last hurdle to get over for a lot of Protestants before they become Catholic. For me, she was like, you know, kind of take you by the hand. Come on, you've got to come the rest of the way,
right.
you know, so...
Well, you know, you mentioned earlier, thinking of obstacle, you mentioned that Christ himself was an obstacle in much the same way
yeah.
that these other aspects that turn out to be obstacles are, in the sense of that he was not the Messiah that they were looking for.
Exactly.
Right? He wasn't what they, in their humanness, they had reduced God and they reduced the Messiah. And then when he came, they weren't able to accept him. And Mary challenges us in some of those same ways, in the sense of it's not the question of what I think God would do,
yeah.
but how has he created
What's
this
he
world?
Doing?
How does he work through? I want to be open to that. And again, she helps to challenge us in some of the same ways that Christ does, but she always points back to him.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. And that's what I found too. And I said, well, I'm a better Christian because I've met her.
Right.
So why would I want to put her aside then?
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you read the saints, or St. Louis de Montfort in particular, like, if this is the way God took to come to us, if Christ took this way to come to us, who are we to say that that's not a good way?
Right.
Or how we would go back to him. It's like, she's there not as an obstacle, but as an intermediary. She's there to make the connection. She wants you to connect with Jesus. She's not the obstacle at all.
Yeah, she reminds us of a very hopeful thing, which is, you know, the reason that we celebrate and we meditate on her assumption into heaven and her coronation is because she's the example of what Christ wants for us, right? He wants to transform and glorify us. But she also reminds us of this terrifying reality that God has chosen to put each other's salvation in each other's hands, right? Like, our prayers actually mean something to somebody else's life, which means if I don't pray for someone, right, I'm letting them down, right? He does...
Yeah.
make us interdependent on
exactly.
each other.
Like, exactly.
He chooses to work through, which is an awesome but terrifying responsibility that we have as Christians.
Yeah. Another thing that as Protestants, they would say, well, we don't believe in the saints. We don't believe in the Blessed Mother, you know, their intercession. I said, why would you not? I said, even St. Paul says it because I was a good little Protestant, I knew my Bible. And I said, he says to pray for the saints in Jerusalem. I said, and what? Because you died, that connection is lost. You can no longer pray for each other. You can no longer intercede. I said, no, if anything, it becomes stronger,
right.
you know. And I said, the Catholics have it right. Mm-hmm. You know, once you get to the other side, you're even busier, you know, really. So.
Right.
But I mean, again, as a 13 or 14 year old, a lot of that just was common sense. It didn't go against my reason. It made it all the connections seemed to be working.
Right. Yeah. So you became Catholic. What happened after that? What was the
Finally, I mean, when I finally was able to go to Mass with my grandmother.
Yeah.
Okay. And I got the okay, reluctantly, from my parents and my grandparents that I lived with to go ahead with it, because how could they say no? I can't go if my grandmother's going. So that was really a stroke of, good fortune there, divine providence, I should say.
Yes.
And so I was on my way, but right before that, when I had asked to become Catholic, my dad said to me, no, because knowing you, that won't be enough. And if you become Catholic, the next thing I know, you'll want to tell me that you want to become a nun. And I didn't want to really tell him that I had already had that thought, because I had met the sisters in Philadelphia and read the catechism, and they were writing to me. And I said, I mean, it seemed like a logical next step, right? But I didn't want to tell him that. But he had it right. It's like, sometimes it's not enough. Sometimes you want all of it. And
right.
and I think that was a lot of the books that I was reading, a lot of the stories of the saints, that's what they did. And I said, why should I not? You know, so I was both my girlfriend and I went to visit the sisters in Philadelphia. Then we went up to Boston, and it was a good fit. And I think We had written, there was a book at the time called Convent Life. Yeah. I mean, this is an old image paperback, double day image. And it had in the back, it had stories of girls who had become nuns. And then in the back, it had all of these addresses that you could write to convents. So we wrote to all of them. Like, you know how you write to colleges at Once Upon a Time? We would write and ask information on all these different orders. In the meantime, the two orders that we had narrowed it down to, from myself anyhow, was the Daughters of St. Paul, because that's where we found all the books, and the Poor Clares. Because I had read a book by Mother Mary Frances, A Right to be Mary. So, and I had also seen at that time, they came out with the movie Brother, Sun, Sister, Moon. And, you know, at that romantic age, it's like, oh, I want to be St. Clare. And actually, I had gone with another girlfriend named Christine. And we came, who was Protestant. We came out of the movie theater and I was just so inspired. And I said, don't you just feel like going home and giving away everything you have and becoming like St. Clare? And her voice literally went up two octaves and she said, no, no. And I said, really? Because I was so inspired with the saints. I said, yeah, they did this. So why can't we do this? Right. But as you know, God has his ways too. I was never able to go to New Mexico to visit the Poor Clares, but every time, for some reason, every time I asked to go to Boston to visit the sisters, my parents said yes. So I went to visit the sisters and, you know, they talked about evangelization and evangelizing through the media with books, with records at the time, with cassette, you know, anything that their founder said, our founder said that, you know, no matter what the media gives you, because when we were founded back in 1915, it was just the printing press. That's it, just the printing press. But he didn't pass away till 1971. So he saw all the new media that was coming up. And he told us, no matter what technology provides, you use it to spread the gospel. You use it. And to me afterwards, I said, well, even this makes perfect sense to me. I said, I was converted through reading books. I was converted through the books that I got at the sister's bookstore on the saints, on the Blessed Mother. I said, so if God was calling me to religious life, to me, it made like, it was perfect fit that I would enter a congregation that had that as their primary mission, you know, to spread the gospel, to spread, you know, the truths of the church through media.
Right.
So
you went and checked them out.
We checked them out. And on it was our first plane trip ever. And on the way, on the plane back, Christine and I had a whole stack of pamphlets or little flyers that the sisters had given us. So we went up and down the aisles in the airplane giving out flyers to all these people. And when her mother picked us up at the airport, one of the men who was on the flight came up behind us and said to the mother, he said, you know, you have two little evangelizers here, you know, two little apostles. And we said, you know, we were just passing out holy cards or whatever it was. But it seemed a good fit. So actually, Chris and I entered the same congregation. She entered again 2 weeks before me. and I entered right after, you know, so that was in 1974. So it's been, it'll be 49 years this year that I've been in the convent. So.
And what's that process like? Was there a time period of discernment, you know, or how does that work in that?
Well, we had met the sisters when we were 13.
Right.
So I didn't enter until I was 17. And back then they had like, you couldn't do anything until you were Catholic for 3 years. So basically I waited it for the 3 years and then, and then entered. But
oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, then, wonderful. Talk about your work then, since you've been coming. What are some of the...
The work that, I mean, as I said, the work that we do is evangelization.
Yeah.
So I would say for at least the past 45 years, I've been working in direct evangelization, either, you know, visiting families, visiting, you know, homes and businesses, working in the book center, talking with people, sharing, and it never seemed like a hard thing to do to share what I liked, what I fell in love with. So so that too was a really good fit. And as you can see, you asked me the right questions, and I have a hard time stopping. But and especially if it's talking about the Blessed Mother, the saints, the beautiful things about about our faith. It comes very natural to want to share that. Yeah. So that's basically what I've been doing. In the meantime, we also have Christmas concerts that we've been putting on for the past 25 odd years. It started in Staten Island, and then it just expanded. So before COVID shut it down, we had been almost doing 10 different concerts between like Thanksgiving and Christmas. And that too was a way to evangelize, but through music. Right. So you're not limited to just the printed word. And as I said, even on Instagram, I found it just as a place to put my favorite quotes, my favorite books, my favorite art, you know, and usually it has to do about the saints or the Blessed Mother, you know, and I've noticed that some of the more popular posts seem to revolve around religious life. People are interested. What do you do in the convent? And why do you do it? And they post about the Eucharist or about our the devotion to the Blessed Mother or the different saints of the day. There's like a real hunger for it, you know, and yeah. Especially on social media, there's not a whole lot of it. So we use what we can and what we're inclined to. Mm-hmm. I tend to be more visual and I like to share, you know, some of the books that I've read. Like I said, sharing has been one of my things. It's like, yeah, and this is just another way to do it. So yeah. I can do it one-on-one. If you come into our book center in Alexandria, most likely I'll tell you about my favorite books, but you know, but we'll do it in any venue. It's not limited to just one.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Again, Instagram. I'm not super familiar with Instagram. I've used it, you know, but we certainly live in a very visual age.
We do.
And
we
so
do.
We, you know, so shifting at least, well, with more of an emphasis on the beauty, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it was beauty that pulled us into the Catholic Church in the first place. You know, as I said, walking into Sacred Heart Church that first time was an eye-opener for us. Apart from seeing stained glass windows of the people that we had been reading about, the beauty of that church was incredible. Mm. It was just incredible compared to our Protestant church that had, you know, it had an occasional stained glass window with a Good Shepherd or, you know, but basically in the front was the pulpit and the choir loft above it. And that was it. That was pretty much it. And you go into Sacred Heart Church, and it's a Romanesque style with the gorgeous artwork and stained glass windows. And, you know, it was just like walking back in time almost. But when we went in the church, there was, and again, at that age, we couldn't put our finger on what it was, but you felt like somebody was there. You honestly felt like somebody was there. There was a presence in the church that going back into my Protestant church afterwards, it's like it was a building. It was just a building. And then we went back into Sacred Heart, and it's like you wanted to be quiet. You wanted to be because you felt like somebody was there. So it's just, you know, that's the atmosphere that we walked into when we went into the Catholic Church. And apart from the music, which I had, you know, in 1971 was pretty bad. But, you know, when we went to visit the sisters, that's when we their second mass was a sung mass in Latin, and it was the Mass of the Angels, Mass of St. Cecilia, Mass of, you know, it was gorgeous. And I said, oh, so this is where they're hiding all the good stuff. This is where it is. But, you know, and then I realized even that is like, it was like the catechism, finding out that, you know, St. Peter was the first of the popes, you know. I said, the music, the art, the history, the whole patrimony of the church is like 2,000 years worth of beauty. That's what it is. And if you read even history in general, music history in general, or you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be church history, you will find that the Catholic Church has its fingerprints all over everything that is beautiful.
Yeah.
It's and I think even to this day, that's our mission, you know, in evangelizing is to evangelize with the word naturally, but also through beauty. And right. the mission of the Daughters of St. Paul, you know, that our founder gave us is to not just give people a book, it's to bring people back to the sacraments. It's like to lead, that's why each of our book centers has a chapel with the Blessed Sacrament present. It's the chapel that the sisters use, but during the day it's open to the public, because that's our goal, is to bring people to the sacraments, to the Eucharist.
For those who aren't familiar, what are the book centers? You've used that
phrase. The book centers, we don't call them bookstores because that too is like part of our training. They are not bookstores. We are not merchants. We are, you know, it's a ministry.
Yeah.
And so we call them book centers because they're not just centers for, and even again, our founder said they're not just centers for books. They're centers of light. They're centers for, you know, that it goes through the books, but it's also through your own personal witness. People don't come in our book centers just to get a book that they could easily get on Amazon much quicker. Okay. They come in because of the sisters. They come in because of that personal contact, that personal witness. And, you know, there was one gentleman who came in. I went to the Shrine bookstore, which is really, I'm any bookstore I'm happy in, right? So I went I was there. And the gentleman who was in charge of it, you know, came up to me and he says, "Are you a daughter of St. Paul?" And I said, I am. And he said, "I just want you to know that I came in your store about 15 years ago looking for something to convince my Catholic wife to leave the church." And he said, "She's from Venezuela." And I thought it was a bunch of mumbo jumbo. So he wanted to convince her, you know, through, of all things, Jesus of Nazareth, the movie from the 70s, right? And he couldn't find it, so he eventually came into our book center, but he was Presbyterian. And he said, "But, you know, I'm one of those lost souls. My church basically told me I'm you know, twice lost or whatever, and that I couldn't receive, you know, the sacraments or whatever." And she said, "Oh, if you're Catholic, you can receive the Eucharist, you know, anytime. And actually, we have the Blessed Sacrament up in our chapel." He said, "What? Say that again?" Because he was convinced that he would never be able to, you know, receive the Lord's Supper. And she said, "Oh, no, as Catholics, we receive the Blessed, you know, we receive the Holy Eucharist every time we go to Mass."
Yeah.
And he said, "Sister, I just want to tell you, by the time I left your book center, I had a copy of St. Maximilian Kolbe and his devotion to the Blessed Mother, and the copy of Jesus of Nazareth." And he said, "And I left your store already convinced that I should become Catholic." So, and then he was working at the Shrine bookstore. I said, "You never know, because a lot of times in our ministry, you say the good word, you encourage people, they leave with a book. You don't always hear the complete story, like what is God doing through that book?"
Right.
And I said, "If anybody is hesitant or has their reservation about what good a book can do," I said, "I am a prime example." I said, "If I hadn't read that particular book, The Song of Bernadette," if it hadn't started me on my journey, I said, "Really? But logically, I should be a Protestant grandmother somewhere in Pennsylvania right now." I said, "But I'm not, obviously I'm not." I said, "Because of a book."
Right.
I said, "So you plant those seeds. You share it. You share the faith in whatever way." And I said, "And if, you know, sooner or later, it'll change somebody's life."
There are a few people out there listening tonight, you know, who maybe came from kind of where your parents, your family were in terms of their Protestant background, or even if somebody listening in who's a fallen away Catholic, or in other words, you know, they've heard this challenge, right? I mean, what are some saints that you'd challenge someone to check out if they want to really understand the Catholic Church, you know, someone in this day and age, who are a few of those saints and resources that would help them get to know that saint?
Well, I mean, there's like I said, I thought I had finished all the good books in the world, and truth be told, you'll never finish. There's never an end to it. So when it comes to the saints, there's a number of books that I could suggest. Mm-hmm. There's some wonderful collection of saints. There's in particular one by, and pardon me if I say her name wrong, Meg Hunter-Kilmer, I think it is. Yeah, she has a lovely book on, I think it's called Pray for Us, if I'm not mistaken. And I often tell the sister in charge of the bookstore, make sure there's about 3 or 4 copies on the shelf, because otherwise I go there and they're gone. But they're all the saints, a lot of saints from the recent, from last century.
Yeah.
They're people who have struggled, people that are you would recognize them as your next door neighbor, for heaven's sakes. You would recognize them as people you know, but they had, because they had similar situations, they lived through the same thing, but it's how they lived through it.
Yeah.
You know, it's that's inspirational. And I think the way she writes is very inviting. And there's also another book called In Cielo, which is the Latin for on earth as it is in heaven. It's taken from the Our Father. Mm-hmm. And it's a saint. It's like a daily devotional on the saints. So it's written by our sisters. And it's a short biographical sketch of the saint with a reflection and a prayer. And at least gives you like the background of to look further, mm-hmm. to look further, because there's so many saints. And I like this one in particular because that, again, they're saints that were canonized by John Paul II, by Benedict, more recent saints, saints that really speak to where we live now. Not that the saints from centuries ago don't, but when you see people that struggle with like marriage problems or with atheism or with, you know, issues that we currently deal with, I think it's more of an encouragement because you realize that it is not an impossibility. And that's what the saints do. They show us that it is possible. Mm-hmm. You know, like Pier Giorgio Frassati. You know, I love that guy. There's certain people that as soon as I see him, I adopt them. You know, it's like, but he's called the man of the Beatitudes. Why? Because he embodied it. And that's what the saints do. They really do embody that. We also have a 2-volume set of saints that one is like, it'll take all different passages of the gospel and then shows you saints that actually personify that passage. And another one that does the Beatitudes or the commandments, and it shows you saints that lived it out. So that's, I think, what is so important about the saints is that they show us this, you know, because sometimes you read the gospel and say, well, that's all well and good, but how? I live in today's world. Yeah. I live in this situation. I have this challenge. But then when you find people that actually have those same situations and challenges, and that with the help of God, they're able to, you know, live the way Jesus has asked us to live. It is possible. Absolutely.
Yeah, we read the gospel and we recognize that the gospel has to then take root in someone's life, right? And then their life becomes part of the story. You know,
exactly. And we are part of that ongoing story. It started in the gospel. It's not finished yet.
Right.
The story is not finished yet. And you are a main player. Yeah. I mean, and nobody ends up in heaven unless they're a saint. So you better be working on it. I mean, it's like, and we need people that can encourage us and that's why the saints are there. Yeah.
We've just a couple minutes left. And if you would also speak to anyone out there, whether Catholic or not Catholic, who may be intrigued at the idea of religious life, you know, whether the Daughters of St. Paul or other forms of religious life, other orders, what would be your encouragement to them if they have this openness to that? What do they do? What do they do with that? How do they discern? How do they go about it?
Well, what worked for us is that first we investigated. And I mean, back in the day, we had to write and wait for the information to come. Yeah. Now you can Google. I mean, you can go online and there's all kinds of information that you can get, and you can also contact the sisters online. But what I would suggest is actually to talk with a sister. And if you find a community that you're especially, you know, you have that connection, I would ask to go visit. You certainly won't lose anything. If it's not what you're meant to do, you know, I think you'll find out pretty quickly. You know, there, like I said, my friend who didn't want to become a poor Clare, it's for certain people, it's like, it makes perfect sense. And for others, it's like, no, that's not for me. That's not for me.
Right. Yeah. Well, and in the meantime, keep your lamps full too, right? Like if you're in that discernment and you're waiting to hear what God wants to do in your life, well, make sure that you're praying, you're staying close to the sacraments. And then, like you said, boldly explore and see where you're led.
I think when I was back then, even before I was Catholic, I remember thinking, did a lot of thinking. And I said, I don't want to waste my life. So God, if you can please tell me like what you want me to do. And I think that's why I found out so quickly. And then the sisters when I met the sisters, they said, now, if you're thinking about religious life, pray 3 Hail Marys every day and ask the Blessed Mother to like ease your way that, you know, like enlighten you and open up doors and open up, you know, certain things we can't come to ourselves, but I mean, why not ask for help? So, and that's not that hard. 3 Hail Marys is pretty doable. So, yeah.
Thank you so much, sister.
Thank
you so much.
For
sharing your story and for your vocation, your prayers, your wonderful work with the Daughters of St. Paul.
My pleasure.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of the Journey Home program. I pray that Sister Julia's stories and inspiration to you. Again, you can find out more about the Order, the Daughters of St. Paul at pauline.org. You can go to paulinestore.com for the bookstore or the book ministry there. You can connect with Sister Julia at Sister Julia, SR Julia on Instagram. And again, if you check out chnetwork.org, you can find more stories like Sister Julia's from all different backgrounds, wherever you happen to be coming from. And if you have a story to tell, we'd love to hear it. You know, so check it out at chnetwork.org. Send us your story. Connect with a network of other converts there. In the meantime, we'll be back next week here on the Journey Home program to share another story with you. God be with you. See you then.